sometimes you get a new head coach or manager and they want to take a bit of time to sort of see how things are and who can do what the best and strongest configuration is. It seems as though, looking at the data, he didn't do that. He just went straight in and said, right, this is how we're going to do it, changed it.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 33 of the Attacking the Championship podcast. My name's Tom Butterfield. I'm your host. And as always, let me welcome our resident guest, our certified data analyst, our scout, FA licensed coach and intermediary, the slightly frustrated David Bromley. How are you, mate?
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. I don't know about fantastic from last week. More of a C plus, I reckon, this week.
So what's been getting you this week then, mate?
You're, as usual, your questions.
I was at the very root of it.
Yeah. So you said, well, there's this idea that when you play a team who doesn't have anything to play for, in theory, they can't go up. Yeah, they can't make the playoffs. They're not really in serious danger of going down. Mm-hmm. We're already wearing their flip-flops or they're on the beach mm-hmm. or they're thinking about their holidays or whatever. And there'll be a soft touch. You know, we can roll them over. So the teams, it tends to be suggested, doesn't it, that if you've got a few of them in your last few games, then you're in better shape than if you've got teams that really, really care. They're either looking to be promoted or avoid relegation. And we just thought, I'll have a look at that. That should be easy enough to look at. And, it wasn't too difficult to figure out. So what I really did was I looked at the last, because we had 8 games to go when we were talking and we've played a couple since. I thought, well, I wonder if you analyse the last 8 games of the season and you put these teams, all the 24 teams in the division into a group of, I came up with 4 groups. So I put like I said, they're either automatic promotion chasers, they're playoff candidates, they're relegation battlers at the bottom, or they're this group which you could call they're on the beach. So I established those groups and I went back over 9 seasons and I looked at how do these teams perform against each of the other groups in their last 8 games. And I compared that performance with the previous 8 games when they definitely did have something to play for. Mm-hmm. So we'll go on to that later.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you
keep
what
your
I found
dry
out
on that one.
And I'll try and, you know, make it as interesting as I can. But we've got loads of other things to talk about.
Absolutely.
As well.
I mean, the first one being that race at the top for those 2 promotion places is heating up a bit, isn't it?
It definitely has, isn't it? We said, didn't we, last week before the Easter break, we looked at them and we thought they were some mouth-watering fixtures. Mm-hmm. And they didn't let us down, really, did they? We got some good ones coming up as well, of course. We've got probably none more exciting than Norwich v Ipswich this weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Massive,
that's going to be
a massive game.
QPR Sheffield Wednesday at the other end too. The top is interesting. 1 week goes one way and you think, well, it's going to be this one and this one. I'm not sure now.
But there was a time when, you know, Leeds were, well, you were handing them the trophy, really, weren't we? You know, it just they were playing so well, and they're still playing exceptionally well. It just happens that Ipswich have really turned it on, and Leicester have just dropped a little bit. I know people are saying that Leicester are crumbling, but Southampton have had their dip. Ipswich have had their dip. Leeds have had their dip. And this is just Leicester's dip, isn't it? You know, it just happens that they've had it at the end of the season. Southampton had a horrendous time of it, where I think they lost 6 on the spin or something. They had a horrendous time of it. So it happens. It's a tough league, isn't it? You know, no team sails through this league without a little bit of a sour patch coming about.
Well, Leicester, of course, turned it round a bit, didn't they? Because they're beating Norwich.
That's right, yeah.
So that was a big, I mean, I think if they hadn't, things would have been very much more nervy for them. But I
still
can't
tell.
Win for them.
I still couldn't tell you which two, let alone which one is going to win the league. I couldn't tell you which two are going to go up.
I mean, I agree, because if Leicester win their game in hand, then you've got them on 88, Ipswich on 87, Leeds on 86, and they're all in form. Probably now it looks like it is those three. And I think a few episodes ago, we were talking about potentially three teams making 100 points, and we were sort of a bit embarrassed about thinking we can't be talking about this. But you know what? It doesn't look that. It
could still happen.
It could still happen, couldn't it? And we wonder what the team that doesn't make it, what's their frame of mind going to be? Because certainly if Leeds or Leicester don't make it, I think they're going to be a bit bruised psychologically from it.
And then we've got down the bottom end. You spoke about QPR playing Sheffield Wednesday at the weekend.
Yeah.
It's how many teams are in there? I've written down how many teams I think are in. I've modified it a little bit since about 2 minutes ago. But how many teams do you think are still in there in the relegation fight?
Well, I think eight are definitely in there, and arguably nine, if you think maybe. I sort of can't really see Swansea getting dragged back down, but you never know, do you? You know, the reason that you're in the bottom half is because you're not that reliable. So I don't know. I wouldn't think, but there's only a point, you know, Swansea on 47, QPR's 46, Blackburn 45, Stoke 45. They're only a point apart, aren't they? It's not as if there's a gap. There's no real gap until you get to Watford in the 14th. Right, but I suppose, have QPR done enough? Maybe not. But if they can beat Sheffield Wednesday, that's going to be a big help to them.
That's a massive... I mean, I think if they do beat Sheffield Wednesday, I think that's them safe.
I think
because
so,
then you've
probably.
You've got 15 points left.
Yeah.
They're... Potentially, let's assume Huddersfield win their game. You're still 6 points out with 15 to go.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a lot of teams between them and Huddersfield.
Yeah.
Or the bottom three to
yeah, I think so.
Overcome
I think that's
you.
A
so
massive...
you wouldn't expect it, I suppose, would you? But there we go. And I think the glaring result for me was Rotherham beating Millwall.
Yeah.
I mean, that really... a body blow to Millwall, wasn't it? Because with the last two results from Rotherham getting, you know, conceding eight goals and not scoring, and then all of a sudden they go and turn you over, that's a massive disappointment, isn't it? Because that really, really pulls Millwall into
Because they were on
it.
A good run, Millwall, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. They,
a really
they were
good
looking,
run.
They were looking like they were turning things around.
At least from a results point of view,
yes.
If not necessarily. Yeah. I'm not sure that they felt, oh, yeah, we're playing so well now, we're stronger now. But I think that, you know, in the end, it's all about results, and they got the points on the board. That would be a dent, won't it? But again, they'll be looking to come back from that away at Huddersfield, a really important game, that.
Yeah, I mean, that's a huge one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean,
and you've said about this sort of, there is no more strong incentive than the survival.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You know, if you're in that bottom three, your head's below water and you know you've got a fight to get yourself out of there, then you'd have to take the home team, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I think so. It's going to be interesting. And so much turns now, doesn't it, on every little round of games.
Yeah.
Exciting.
It is. It is. I mean, there's one team sitting in there that's just bobbing above the surface of the relegation zone, which is Plymouth, who have been a little bit of a lead balloon for the league, really, haven't they? It wasn't long ago that we saw that Plymouth's home fixtures to come were quite hard, but their home form was very good, and they had relatively easy away fixtures, in theory. That we were thinking, well, could they be an outside bet for the playoffs? Little did we know that they were going to drop like a stone, not score at home for I think five matches, and they were going to lose their manager.
Well, exactly, and they're going to lose two really influential players at the same time, weren't they?
That's right. Yeah, so, absolutely. So it's all happened, really. You know, they've lost a manager in Schumacher. They've lost another manager in Foster. One manager's gone because he did so well. One's gone because he didn't really do it so well, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
We got quite interested in that, didn't we? And yeah. I mean, even before Mr. Foster unfortunately lost his job, and we got a Plymouth fan, or a Plymouth vlogger, really, a guy called Harvey England, who volunteered to actually give us his opinion on what he sees week in, week out. So I just want to play that clip for you now, for you to listen to, and then we'll maybe talk about it in a bit more detail afterwards.
So my current views on obviously the Foster situation, he has departed the club, and many fans, if not all fans, are delighted with this departure. I feel like he got everything wrong. I feel like he ruined our attacking philosophy, which Schumacher and even Ryan Lowe implemented while they was in charge of the football club. He was always in an uphill battle with the departure of Azaz and Kaysler Hayden. So the first week he was joining, I feel like he ruined players as such. I feel like Whittaker, he went from a goal scoring machine, possibly up there with the top players in the championship, to now being, I'd even go as far to say, as average. Ryan Hardy, I feel like it's come apparent he's been a ghost last few weeks, and the chances he's had, he hasn't put them away where he could have. Dan Scar and Callum Wright obviously becoming ghost players at a club, being obviously with all the rumours of them being told to train by themselves and whatnot. So I do feel like the departure is going to be a success. 6 cup finals to go. But I feel like now the relegation battle is a little bit more exciting. I feel like the fans can truly get behind the team a bit more. Rotherham on Friday, I feel like these next 2 games at least are must wins. And to the others, they've got to be counted as cup finals, and we've got to leave everything out on the pitch. But thank you for having me on.
So I found that quite interesting, Dave, because quite a lot of what Harvey said, I mean, I've seen a few Plymouth games and watched a few highlights and a few different things. And there's definitely been a difference since Mr. Schumacher left and Mr. Foster came in.
Yeah.
And Harvey, well, let's pick it apart as we go. So he made the point there that he felt that Foster coming in, he'd ruined or changed the attacking or the playing style of Plymouth. So I know you've got a little bit more information on that. So what are your thoughts on that point, first of all?
Yeah, I think his record, I mean, it's you know, doesn't bear scrutiny really, does it, in the end? I've got him down 15 games. I think there was a sort of turnover period from Schumacher to Foster, right, where the sporting director came in, and I think he's come back in again. You could argue about whether it's 15 or 16 games, but I think of the 15, I think they lost 8, drew 4, won 3, but it's the last 10 or 12 games where they've really not, you know, they haven't won, they've won one in the last 12 or something.
Yeah.
And they've gone down from, again, it depends where you draw the line, but they've gone down from maybe 18th to 21st, or maybe even 16th to 21st, depending on where you draw the line. But it's not looking good, is it?
No.
But what he seems to have done, I mean, to first of all just look at the sort of data side of it. They were always a bit of a direct side. You know, they always like to sort of get the ball forward and attack. And they've been an attacking team under Schumacher for sure. But one of the bigger differences was that they were one of the least pressing, high pressing teams in the division, but they've turned that round to be, you know, much more of a high pressing team. He's come in and changed it from a 4-3-3 to a 3-5 at the back, and he's switched on the press, really. So he's obviously basically changed things round immediately. Sometimes you get a new head coach or manager, and they want to take a bit of time to sort of see how things are and who can do what the best and strongest configuration is. It seems as though, looking at the data, he didn't do that. He just went straight in and said, right, this is how we're going to do it, changed it. Now, I guess if you do that and it works for you, then you're the hero, aren't you?
Yeah.
But it does leave you vulnerable if you make changes straight away, where somebody can draw a line after a certain match day and go, right, he took over here, and they can pick apart very easily what changed. And then, of course, you get, and this isn't always fair, because there's always a lot more going on than you can see at first glance. And if you're an avid fan and you watch all the games and you think, you know what's you know what the trends are and everything, then you'll be probably better genned up. But you can definitely look and see that there was a change. And unfortunately, yeah, in the end, it was one where the results went against him, and it's an easy stick to beat him with, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, the biggest change, like you said, is the pressing, and it's pretty marked, isn't it? I mean, they were, after 22 games, they were the least pressing team, as you, yes, said. And by the time Mr. Foster was relieved of his duties, they'd actually moved up into the top half as far as pressing, hadn't they? So
yeah,
for it to have that amount of swing, you'd say that they're probably in the top three or four as far as pressing, wouldn't you? Because in order, exactly, to gain that sort of momentum, yeah, they'd have to be there. So it's such a dramatic change.
Yeah.
Because you would imagine with a direct counter-attacking team like Plymouth, if you're not pressing, then you're falling back into ranks, aren't you? You're going back into your shape, as we've talked about on previous, yeah, episodes. And you're saying to the other team, right, okay, come on, you're going to have to really throw things at us in order to break us down, because we know exactly where we're going to be. And then, yeah, of course, if a team does overcommit or does, you know, misplace a pass somewhere, they're ready to spring and come in forward with players like Whittaker, who were, you know, really, really effective under Schumacher. That does seem to be a big change, doesn't it? Because if you're pressing, all of a sudden, you're not as solid in your shape as you were. The players aren't used to being left a little bit more vulnerable, maybe at the back.
Yeah.
And that seems to have certainly, well, not certainly, but could potentially be one of the reasons why the form has dropped off.
Well, you know, if some of this is related to things that are not easy to establish, like the strength of the opposition. Because when you've been in the job for, you know, 15 games or something, it's a third of the year. There's a chance that third happened to be against a certain style of play mostly, or we've seen this before. You know, sometimes, of course, you can go in and you've played all the hardest teams and you go on a great run and everybody says, oh, it's brilliant, you change it to this and it's fantastic. But they don't look under the surface and they don't recognise that some of the teams that you played were some of the easier teams. And it could be, and I haven't done that sort of analysis on it, so I don't know to what degree some of that might have fed into it. But it's definitely, when you change things, and we've seen it's pretty dramatic. You know, he just changed the formation. Yeah. They were always a team. We were talking about this because they've been one of your kind of pet, you know,
they have been, your, yeah, sort been of my, second of my favorite,
or your
projects,
first favorite team,
yeah,
in the division. And I've enjoyed watching them, and they were always trying to get on the front foot. They were always dangerous going forward. And so I think that's sort of fallen away a bit. Now, how much of that is due to Azaz moving back in, yeah, January and then moving on again, Kundal moving back? Undoubtedly, that's going to have made a, yeah, difference.
Because they went from, I mean, we've got the numbers here with the game changer scores. The game changer score is the amount of sort of attacking output, isn't it, that the players have. And 100% is the league average, or what you'd expect them to kick out.
Yeah.
And Azaz and Kundal were certainly not average, were they?
They were way, way above, weren't they? They were really at the heart. And this is the problem that you have when you take loan players, isn't it? You can be really pleased with yourself because you can bring in some quality players from above, you know, from Villa and Wolves in this case, who are young, look like they're going to play at a higher level. You get a really good sort of solid performance out of them. You couldn't perhaps have afforded to have brought them in as your players. So you're riding on the back of that a bit, but obviously one of two things happens then. Either they're playing so well that the club want them back, which is what happened in these cases, or you're just a shop window for someone else,
yeah,
who comes on and takes them off you. So in this case, it did look like that happened, didn't it? So
at that point, wasn't it, when Schumacher left, you had Finn Azaz was at 230% game changer, yeah, score, and
go,
Luke Kundal at 167%. So
yeah,
really, they're, you know, they're almost three three or four players there, aren't there?
Yeah, they're really important to you, aren't they?
And then the replacements, or the direct replacements, seem to have been Alfie Devine and Giabi, don't they, who have come in from Tottenham. You know, Devine is a very well thought of player at Tottenham, and Giabi at Leeds is also, you know, thought to be have good things ahead of them.
Mm.
So we're certainly not saying they're not good players.
Yeah.
But as far as from a game changer score of actually an output attacking wise, they've not even really, well, they've not even lived up to the average, have they?
Devine was sent off, wasn't he, in the last, was it the last game?
I think he was, yeah. Yeah, I think he was. So he's not,
I mean, that
available.
Can happen, but yeah, no, I mean, it was unlikely they were going to replace him and not notice the difference, wasn't it? Sure. So I'm sure that Ian Foster's kind of, you know, looking at that and thinking that was just kind of, that was hard luck on me, really.
Yeah.
Because it coincided, but that's, I mean, and
I think he had the choice of who bought in. So I know he'd worked with Devine, Alfie Devine in the England youth setups, and I think he worked with Giabi before as well. So, I mean, Giabi, after the 40 games now, I believe, you can correct me if I'm wrong here, David, Giabi's got a game changer score of 53%. Alfie Devine's is 86%. Is that right?
That's probably right if you're looking at it. Giabi, 53, Devine 86. Yeah, you're right.
Mm, so,
you know, and
you look at the difference there attacking wise. I mean, that must, well, not must, but you would imagine that that's going to then feed on to the players further up, because I think we classify Devine and Giabi as attacking support. And then we've got our chance creators and strikers, and the main one really for Plymouth was Morgan Whittaker, wasn't it?
Yeah, and he's an interesting one.
Yeah.
And again, I'm not going to pretend that, you know, I've watched all the games and I know everything inside out about the player. But when you look at the data, you see that actually from about the time when Schumacher was leaving. He had that purple patch, Whittaker, where I think in ten games he scored 9 goals and got 4 assists. So, you know, he was really on fire.
Yeah, he was flying, wasn't he?
But they started him on the wing, you know, as part of a 4-3-3. Looks like Foster brought him into his change of shape just as a more of an attacking midfield player, gave him the captain's armband by the look of it. And he was doing well for the first sort of 3 or 4 games. And then what's he got, 2 in 9 since? Mm. So it's, you know, he definitely seems to have, his output's been blunted, hasn't it?
Yeah.
And you'd have to say it's going to be all tied up with performance of the team. What comes first? You know, does a player go off form so the team don't achieve? Or is it the change of approach in the team pattern and style of play that isn't suitable for the player, so he doesn't perform? And there's probably a bit of both going on.
Yeah, it's difficult, isn't it? Because you've got, as you quite rightly said, you pointed to the change in formation, to going from a 4-3-3 to a 5 at the back. His role has maybe changed in there a little bit. He's gone from being a wide attacking player maybe to a bit more of a midfield player. So maybe he's not getting the chances as much. And maybe it was always going to happen. You know, maybe this was going to be a revert to the mean sort of thing. Who knows? But certainly we talk about, don't we, the attacking support players feeding the chance creators, who then create the chances for the strikers to score the goals.
Yeah.
And if you've got Kundal and Azaz, who were so productive in that attacking support, then you think of it as, well, they're obviously generating quite a large amount of fodder for the funnel to go into the chance creators, to go into the strikers. So if the fodder now or the output from those attacking support players is only 86% and 53%, way below the average, then you haven't got a lot to play with, have you? So Whittaker might be that he's still as clinical as he has been, but he's got to do, he hasn't got as many opportunities to score those goals, has he, and have those opportunities.
I'm sure that that's part of it. You know, it may be also that, you know, we talk about expected goals and you get hot streaks, don't you, where you know, you're going to get a reversion to the mean. So it may be, I mean, wasn't going to keep up 9 goals in 10 games for very long, was he?
No.
Unless he's Sammy Smodic, of course.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll put that caveat in
another
there.
Another two at the weekend, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's mad. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't going to carry on at that rate, but even so, I don't know. I'll tell you what I did notice. This might be just being a little bit provocative. So it may be, maybe it doesn't mean anything, or it maybe it does. But people, I think, have been talking about, you know, well, you know, Foster changed it. We were a really attacking team, and he's sort of turned it into a, you know, a less attacking team. When he was at the England youth setup with Cooper and they won the World Cup, the under 17s, he had the role of national specialist out of possession coach. Just thought I'd throw that in there.
That's an interesting role. That's not one I've heard before.
You know, I'm not saying it's like you can just draw a line from one thing to another, but I just thought it's sort of interesting, perhaps. But, you know, people have got different ways of viewing how to win games, haven't they? And we've very firmly nailed our colours to the attacking mast on this pod, which we'll probably come on to again later on.
Absolutely. So that's really interesting. So he was, I'm going to try and remember what you said, national specialist out of possession coach.
Yeah.
So that would certainly, you know, having a look at their playing style change, counter-attacking looks the same. Possession looks the same. Directness looks the same. The only thing that really has changed massively is pressing, isn't it? So that's really interesting to see that, because if that's his thing, it's like, well, I'm known as being this out of possession guy. I'm pressing is where I think it's at.
Yeah.
And that's the big change.
Maybe.
So that's,
and the other thing I'll throw in there while I'm throwing these hand grenades in there is, you know, so here goes the pin. But Schumacher goes to Stoke and he plays his 4-3-3 at Stoke, and you know, he's not pulling up any trees there, is he? I think they've, the last couple of few games, they've got a few wins under their belts.
They seem to be getting it together, but as we know, that can change. It's interesting because the question that's been sort of festering in the back of my mind, did Schumacher know that Azaz and Kundal were going back to their clubs?
Well, Kundal ended up at Stoke, of course.
Yeah, that's right. Did he know he was available for transfer and wanted to take him there? And did he know Azaz was going back because he was doing so well and thought, well, this is a great opportunity for me, because when these guys are gone, I think my stock is going to go down because the team's going to suffer.
Well, well, we don't know, but you might, if you spoke to Ian Foster, you might get a perspective on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mightn't you? I don't know.
Did he know had the players gone by the time he got in there? I assume they would have done, wouldn't they?
Well, he went just before Christmas. So, and they obviously didn't move until the January.
That's right, yeah.
So, but I mean, the fact that he ends up at Stoke, I don't think that's a coincidence, is it?
No.
You know, no. Kundal. So, but did he know about Azaz on his way? Did he? It may well have factored into the decision. I mean, one of the things you would say about coaches and managers and their moves and their career progression is a lot of the time it is about timing. You know, it's, does he make a move? You know, what do you do if you're Kieran McKenna? You know, do you jump at the first Premier League opportunity? I mean, his Premier League opportunity might come with Ipswich, of course. But what do? Do you jump at the first sort of inverted commas big club offer? Or do you go, I'm a young coach, you know, I think I've got a lot to offer, but I've got a lot to learn. I want to be somewhere where I'm nurtured, where I'm allowed to develop a style, and because he doesn't have all the answers, does he? I'm sure he'd be the first to say. But we've also seen, haven't we, where you get a great run and you can't do anything wrong and you don't move, and then it turns as it tends to, and then all of a sudden you're not being spoken of in the same way.
No, exactly.
And maybe you missed your chance. So I certainly know of managers who would swear that timing is a massively important part of the
The trajectory of sticking with Schumacher. You look at the trajectory of Plymouth when he was there. Their arrow is without doubt pointing upwards. Whereas the Stoke arrow or position, I don't think it could have got much lower than where they were. I think they were pretty much around where they are now, weren't they?
Yeah.
And they haven't really done anything for two or three seasons, have they?
No.
At the very least, they've been bobbing around there. So, like you say, that timing thing, you know, Plymouth are riding high. Ceiling-wise, I mean, I think Plymouth is a really nicely run club. They seem to really have got the idea of how to run things effectively, recruitment, you know, really setting themselves up well, seem to have. Hopefully that will continue.
Mm-hmm.
However, resources-wise, Stoke and Plymouth are on a different level, aren't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you could say the ceiling for Stoke in the short term anyway would be much higher than you'd expect for Plymouth.
Yeah, and that makes them a very attractive option, doesn't it? Because people, managers, head coaches will be looking and thinking, someone's going to get it together there, and I think it could be me.
Yeah,
and there is a big reward for anybody who does. So yeah, I can see why you would be attracted by it for sure.
I found it a really interesting little dig into Plymouth, to be honest with you. So
yeah, it's an interesting environment. There.
Yeah, so thank you, Harvey, for making the effort to reach out and give us that synopsis, because it's good to hear from someone who watches the team every week and covers them in a lot of detail. So Harvey's actually got his own YouTube channel, and he vlogs on the Plymouth games every week. So I'll put the link in the show notes, so you can go there and maybe subscribe and support Harvey if you're a Plymouth fan, or if you're a rival fan, you just want to go and give him a little bit of banter. You can probably do that as well. I don't think Harvey would mind that. But you alluded earlier, David, to it might have been before we were recording, that when things happen, we tend to sort of choose something, or we say, well, that happened because of this, because we've looked at Plymouth there and we could quite easily say, oh, well, it's just because Foster was rubbish. Whereas there's a lot of moving parts there, aren't there? So why is it you feel do we sort of like to point the finger and go, it was that, and it might not be that at all?
Yeah, it's well, that is a subject that we've dipped in and out of, isn't it, over the last sort of few episodes, really. And I think we could, if you like, come on to that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's another example of it, is where the thing that I sort of introduced at the top of the episode, when we were talking about this end of season thing, whether teams have got anything to play for, because it's a perfect example of another thing that we say.
Perfect.
Yeah, we've all said it, you know. Oh well, you know, they're on the beach. They won't be. They're as good as up, because they've got to play three teams with nothing to play, where they're going to play teams that are, you know, against relegation or rival promotion chasing teams. So it is a common claim that's made. So what, as I said, I thought, let's have a look at this. So I sort of set it up, as I said earlier, with these different groups and looking at two different periods, last eight games, previous eight games to those. And I'll tell you what was funny. If you look at last weekend, the Good Friday and the Easter Monday, we had some pretty good examples there of results where you might say, well, if I've got this idea that a team with nothing to play for is a soft touch, for example, look at Sunderland 1, Blackburn 5, you know, you could say, well, Sunderland could be argued to be one of the teams that, you know, they're in that perhaps small group of four. I picked out from this season, Sunderland, Watford, I think Swansea and
Bristol City might have been another one as well, yeah.
Where I felt, look, as much as we can say they're probably not going to make the playoffs. They're probably not going to get dragged into the relegation. So Sunderland won, Blackburn 5. You could say, well, that was a pretty good example of a team, Sunderland, you know, at home.
Beach towels under the under the arm there.
Not against one of the sort of real forces this season, mm-hmm. Blackburn, although you don't know what you're going to get from Blackburn, by the way.
No, true.
But so there you go. If you were thinking that, you might go, well, there's your example. Enough said.
Proof. And then that's it.
And then you've got Swansea 0, QPR 1. You know, losing at home to a team that's been struggling all season. On Easter Monday, are they just kind of, well, as you say, this is, we're done really. Mm-hmm. So it's not very exciting. Let's just go through the motions. But the counter argument, had a lot more examples. You had Bristol City 1, Leicester 0 on Good Friday. Mm-hmm. So if Bristol City aren't going anywhere, they managed to find some motivation to beat the top of the table.
Yeah.
Also on Good Friday, Cardiff 0, Sunderland 2. So Sunderland, this team that we've said, not interested. They went to Cardiff on Good Friday and beat Cardiff.
Yeah.
And Cardiff certainly had enough to play for in that game.
Sure.
Watford 2, Leeds 2 on Good Friday. Watford, mm-hmm. you know, do they care?
There's almost some, got the win as well,
almost
didn't
they? Got the win, apart from the very late equaliser. Yeah. Plymouth 0, Bristol City 1. You know, again, Easter Monday, Bristol City on their travels. It's a long old way to go. Mm-hmm. We haven't got much to play for. I suppose it's not as fast for them to go as it is for a lot of teams to go.
Sure.
But even so, they go down there and they beat Plymouth. And then West Brom 2, Watford 2. And actually, again, Watford really, until 13 minutes from the end, were 2-0 up.
Yeah.
So, you know, you could say, well, for every time you tell me that you've seen an example that supports your claim, I can give you one or more, certainly from this weekend. I just thought it was interesting because we had quite a few examples of those matchups. Uh-huh. So what I did, I looked over the 9 seasons and I thought, well, can we see a pattern to confirm it or otherwise? And the results are in, and guess what? I would say they're inconclusive. Uh-huh. I was just kind of trying to look at, what would you have expected to have happened and what actually did happen? And I went back to 2014-15. The first 3 seasons started to look like there might be something in this claim, because when you compare the points per game that the beach teams, in inverted commas, mm-hmm. managed to achieve against the previous 8 games, they were worse in the last 8 games. So I started to think, maybe, you know, this is an indicator that they're not that interested and their form's sort of falling off a cliff. The next 3 seasons, 2017 to 2020, I think, it was the opposite. They did better in the last 8 games than they had in the previous 8. And then it just turned around again. So and to be honest, Tom, I spent so long trying to find something to hang on to where I could say, but look at this. I even looked at the average age of the squads and overlaid that on top, thinking mm-hmm. that, you know, were there some squads that had younger players who, I think you said this, you know, what about the squads or the teams that bring the younger players in when there's not so much to play mm-hmm. for and they bust a gut because they want to be part of the next season? Or what about the players who are the fringe players who come in, who haven't played much, maybe playing for a new contract or an extension of a contract? Yeah. They've got something to play for. So, but it didn't seem to make any difference. And then I looked at the foreigners and again, thinking, well, does that make any difference? Are they a bit less bothered? Because I could imagine some people saying, well, you know, players that come here from foreign climes, they're coming here for one reason. So when there's not much to play for at the end of the season, they're thinking about, oh, I'm going to get back home for the summer. But it really, there was nothing in it. There was nothing you could really hang your hat on. So, you know, I tried to tell myself, well, that's interesting in and of itself.
Yeah.
But it's not that interesting.
Yeah, I think it is though, because I'm guilty of it. You know, I've spoken to people I know, you know, say, oh, well, you know, the old flip-flop rule was going to come out, you know, getting the beach towel under the arm, you know, that sort of thing. The players come out with their sunscreen on, all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But you don't really know until you dig into it, right. And like you're saying, you can, we could probably, and maybe this feeds back into our, the point I was saying earlier to you was, we could focus on that 3 years where it was quite viable. And you could say, well, yeah, it seems to have been here. And we could say, well, that proves our point. And we could say, look, see, these teams beat these teams. We've got nothing to play for. That's it. So really, it's, we can find ourselves focusing on what we want to see.
Yes.
Can't we? Because if we see, what we see is all there is, I think is a good phrase from the book that we've both read by Daniel Kahneman. And it's important that we try and keep our mind open, isn't it? And make sure that we're willing to listen to or see the counter argument in order to keep ourselves honest and try and protect ourselves from just jumping to conclusions, I suppose.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That is what this is all about. It's all about our desire, as we've said before, as human beings, to understand and to think that we've got control of a situation because we've considered the information, in this case the data, but it doesn't have to be data, it can be anything. It can be, you know, well, I've seen enough examples of this in my life to know that when this happens, then that's going to happen next. But have you? Usually the answer to that is no. But it's these what are called cognitive biases, these mental shortcuts, these heuristics, they serve us well. Usually, you know, for most of our lives, they get us through our day, and they mean we don't have to kind of go into a great big research project to do the simplest thing. You know, we learn we can take a small amount of information and we can make a decision based on what we know from a small amount of information. And you talk about Daniel Kahneman, and I found a quote from him, and he says, jumping to conclusions is efficient if the conclusions are likely to be correct and the costs of an occasional mistake are acceptable. But jumping to conclusions is risky when the situation is unfamiliar, the stakes are high, and there's no time to collect more information. So that's from the sort of horse's mouth, as it were. This is the book called Thinking Fast and Slow, which I heartily recommend if you're that kind of way inclined. It's a really, really, it's not a kind of highly technical, dull, boring read. It's a really interesting, real life situation. I think it really intriguing book.
And it
applies in this case because, but we, I was going to sort of kind of come on to just talking a little bit about that at the end. But yeah, it's absolutely true. And in this case, that's exactly what we're looking at. We think that because we go back to those seven games at the weekend and we go, right, well, here's a couple of examples where it happened. So yeah, that's more confirmation that what we all say is right. But then we go on to the next five games and we go, well, hang on a minute, what about these? And we don't know, do we? Because until I did all this work, and I'm kind of still smarting a bit from having done it, but I didn't know. I didn't. I was kind of hoping that we might find some patterns because it's nice to find a pattern. You know, when you do you do some research, it's nice to see it. And you go, look, there it is. That's the thing that we all thought was right. And usually then what happens is everyone goes, well, we knew that. How long did you spend that? On that, but the truth is, you didn't really know it.
No,
you thought it, but as many times as you think you're right, you're probably wrong. But I know you wanted to have a chat about another contact that you've had, or I think some question that you'd seen to do with Ipswich. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, I sent you a comment that I saw on the BBC, one of the BBC websites. I'll read it out. I've got it here.
Yeah.
So this is from someone called SMO.
Right.
Sure, it's not their full name. They might not be an Ipswich fan, actually, because they say they, brackets, okay, Ipswich, need to strengthen in defence to achieve automatic promotion. Their offensive players getting them out of jail many a time, but at the tail end of the season, where goal difference may come to play, stopping opponents from scoring should be key now.
Right.
which kind of goes against what we believe, doesn't it?
Well, it on the face of it, it's kind of the opposite to the basis on which we sort of started to launch the pod, isn't it? Because we you know, attacking the championship, it's not just a kind of phrase we pulled out of thin air. We believe that the way that you get out of the championship, the right way, the way you want to get out of it, is by attacking. So the question arose, as you say, do Ipswich need to tighten their defensive grip if they want to maintain their automatic promotion spot or slot? And there's no doubt. I mean, they've scored 84 goals in 40 games. They're the highest scoring team in the league, which is brilliant. You know, if you're watching, if you're a neutral, you know, and you, as much as you like watching Plymouth, you like watching Ipswich too, I think. Sure. Breath of fresh air. And both of them, of course, coming up from League One. So it's fantastic. But they've conceded 51 goals, which is the same number of goals as QPR, who are 16th, and Ipswich are top. So that's kind of remarkable.
Yeah, but, for sure.
So I can understand why, whether he's an Ipswich fan or whether he's just an interested sort of observer, but why he might say that. Half a dozen games to go. Is there a precedent then for suggesting that when you get to this last few games, you've got to have a tight defence? So in the time-honoured fashion, I decided, well, I'll have a look back then. I've got some...
Good man.
I've got the seasons. I've got the nine seasons. I've already divided them up into the last eight games. So I thought I'd have a look at those last eight games and see what actually does seem to transpire regarding goals scored versus goals conceded. And is there a relationship? And I'm pleased to say in this particular case, there is a bit of a relationship. It's not a really, really powerful one. But I think if you look at, I looked at home and away. So I looked at the teams, all the teams in the division, their last eight games, how many goals they scored and how many goals they conceded at home, and then how many they scored and how many conceded away, and then the total. And it does seem to be that the stronger correlations, and they're not obviously, because we're talking about eight games, you're not going to get, you know, 80, 90% relationships. You're not going to get that because one game out of eight is 12.5% of the total. So, you know, it's going to swing you all over the place. And I suspect these numbers will be a lot stronger if you took out, if you took more games into consideration. But even so, you'd look at it and say, there have been some slight swings from one season to the next. But generally speaking, if you can score goals, you're more likely, there's a stronger relationship between the goals scored and the finishing positions than there is between goals conceded and the finishing positions. So it's more likely that you'll finish higher if you're a high scorer than if you're a low conceder. And that that gels with what we looked at. I mean, we looked at a lot of stuff before we started this. We went back 10 or 5 years, but we looked at all the games. We looked at all the metrics that could be considered to be sort of attacking based or defensive. And we looked at, we wanted to find out what the reality was. And the reality is the teams that do best generally are the teams with the strongest attack. And even if they're like Ipswich, because you could say, oh, well, that's obvious. Well, it isn't that obvious because Ipswich are shipping goals for fun. You know, a lot of coaches would have a heart attack watching it. If they were the Ipswich coach, watching their team concede 51 goals in 40 games. And that on its own, you would look at it and think, well, if I'm going to be in a battle at the end of the season, it's going to be against relegation, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
You wouldn't think you're going to be, you certainly wouldn't think you're going to be top of the league.
No, for sure.
But they are top of the league. And the numbers, if they suggest anything, I would say they suggest, if you're Ipswich, be careful about what you do. If you're going to change anything, don't change anything that's going to stop you scoring goals. That would be my kind of really very kind of blunt message from this. Because
we looked at how important the first goal is, didn't we?
Yeah.
And for the vast majority of teams, if they conceded the first goal, they tended to not do very well. Did they? You know, that's below the 20% of points available they were winning. But Ipswich were one of the teams that were above the 50% mark, weren't they?
Yeah.
And they and they are, I believe, the team that's won the most amount of points from losing positions this season. So for me, it just and am I right in saying that when teams did go behind, we found that the way to get or the most efficient way of getting back into the games or winning games from that or coming back and scoring was to increase the tempo, be more aggressive, you know, direct, get balls into the box, to the front man, that sort of thing, which is pretty much what Ipswich are all about, isn't it? So
I think it is. Yeah, we did find that, didn't we? Because we were looking for players. One of the episodes was if you're a team that is going behind and struggling to get back into games, which type of player with regard to their specific playing style might be the most effective player to look for if you're going to recruit.
Yeah.
And we did. We found that they're the players that follow that kind of, well, you know, let's get a little bit more direct. Let's get a little bit more old school, almost, really. Yeah. Let's get in the box. Let's engage the defenders in one-on-one duels, things like that. There's a number. You could go back and listen to the episode.
And who did they get in January to play up front for them?
Well, here you go, Kiefer Moore,
pretty much that, didn't they?
Exactly,
they got that exact sort of prototype of a player. So
they did, yeah.
No, it's working well for them. I mean, they're winning. Was it they beat Rotherham 4-3? They beat Southampton 3-2.
Yeah,
you know they're scoring goals for fun, and it's great.
It's a bit white knuckle, isn't it? To be honest, you know, if you're a fan, you might go, oh, I just wish they could just grind out a 1-0 or something. But you know, I think the thing is, sometimes you have to take the message on board and say, I mean, I can remember a season, quite a few seasons ago in the Championship, when Steve Bruce was managing Hull City, and they went up that year. They lost a lot of games, but they won a lot of games. They never drew any games.
Yeah.
And the obvious thing to say is, look, if you can win one and lose one, you're better off than drawing two, aren't you?
Yeah, for sure.
So that's what this pod's been about, really. It's been about, look, just look at the numbers, because there's 3 points for a win. So in the old days, it was 2 points to be distributed for every match. I'm talking about, you know, God knows how long ago. But, you know, 1 point for a draw, 2 points for a win. So it was a different dynamic. But now, if it's a draw, one of those points goes out the window. They evaporate. There's 3 points to be played for. And it comes home at the end of the season. The teams that are able to win games are rewarded. And you don't win games if you don't score goals.
Exactly.
You know, I know this is basic stuff, but you can overlook it sometimes, can't you?
I think it does get overlooked. And I think at the very start, maybe even before we recorded an episode, you had a look at the things that seem to correlate best with getting out of the Championship the right way, going up. And wins, I think draws, was it a 4 or 5% correlation or something like that? So it's like, well, that's nothing.
Yeah,
I think even things like attendance were way higher than draws.
Yeah, there was a lot of things that would, if you were looking at the game as a sort of what we have, we hold, you know, and I'm not arguing, it's a subtle point. I'm not arguing that you should throw caution to the wind and not concern yourself with being tight defensively. Because that is a part of the game, and that's a very, very important thing to try and do, but not at the expense of creating at the other end. And, you know, there's 11 players, so if you're going to play five at the back, this is a very kind of, again, this is a very sort of broad brush way of looking at it. But if you're going to play five at the back, then there's an extra player needed that maybe could have contributed to creating chances for you.
For sure.
You know, and I know, okay, and I know coaches are going to go, yeah, but five at the back's not really five at the back. It's, you know, whichever side wing back pushes on and you end up. So we know that there are, the intricacies are there, but even so, you can't be an effective attacking force, effective defensive force at the expense of your attack and still want to be promoted. We don't think we see that. I think it's actually becoming more the case. You know, if it ever wasn't, I think it's becoming more and more that it's you need to be able to score goals. Some of the teams that haven't managed to get over the line in recent seasons, for all their sort of solidity and everything, have been the teams that just you don't see where the goal's coming from.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I mean, I would guess, educated guess, hopefully, that there's more teams that get promoted by being the top scorers in the league than there are from being the team that's conceded the least amount of goals in the league, for sure. Because
I know what you're doing, by the way. Don't think that I haven't seen what you're doing, trying to slip in another challenge. I know you too well. But yes, I think I would say, if I had to put my money down, that I would agree. I'd agree with that.
Yeah, because as you say, winning games is what it's all about. And
yeah,
we've seen quite a few teams. I mean, Blackburn nearly did it last year, didn't they? Where they, I think at one point, they won 14 and lost 14 in the league. And they were literally just winning and losing, and that was it. But they were in maybe third or fourth position because
you're right,
they'd won so many games.
Yeah. Well, looping back to what you were talking about, we've dipped into this about the you know, jumping to conclusions and all these sort of mental shortcuts and so on. But, you know, Daniel Kahneman mentions this: jumping to conclusions is risky when the situation is unfamiliar or the stakes are high. Well, you could say, look, if we're going to jump to conclusions in football, like, you know, it's better to do this than that, and we've looked at a few of them today, the stakes are pretty high, aren't they?
Mm.
You know, if you're going to say, well, facing teams with nothing to play for, you know, we know about it. Well, all I'd say is don't underestimate the personal agendas of the opponents, because you were quite right in what you said, that you've got a squad of 25 or more and they all want to play and they've all got a career and they all care more about that than they care about anything else, despite what they say, and understandably. So given the opportunity, you know, a player is going to want to play for his place, for his new contract or whatever. Don't discount that, and don't discount pressure. Don't discount the fact that teams without anything to play for have got less pressure. They're not, you know, playing scared. They're able to express themselves. And then this other idea of attack versus defence, scoring versus not conceding. We've done the research. We did it before we started the pod. And the results are pretty consistent there. And we found that there is an answer to that. If you want to look at it, do the research, because as far as the Championship's concerned, and I've no reason to believe it's necessarily different in other leagues, but of course we would say do the research there too. But to attack the Championship, that is the way out of the Championship. For somebody involved in football, there's nothing more important, is there? You know, we can get away with making jumping to conclusions in our lives a lot of the time because the stakes aren't that great. You know, for our everyday life, we can run along with this sort of this belief that something is provable when it isn't, but it's not going to do as much harm. But when it is going to do you some harm, and you know your whole effort is based on it, don't assume, because you'll find that what everybody thought was the case, and you'll only, again, I know I'm rambling on a bit, but you'll only ever hear people say, yeah, well, that was obvious, about the thing that turned out to be obvious.
Sure.
But a lot of things don't. And then where were these people then?
Exactly.
Don't hear from them.
No, it is interesting. And like you said, it's kind of what we're all about on this podcast, isn't it? Is to really uncover these things and say, well, do they really play? Are they really an attacking team? Do they really press? Is this player really effective, or do the numbers say something else? And are they really as effective as we think, Or is the fact that they're not effective because their teammates aren't finishing the chances they're creating? And, you know, should we be recruiting this person instead of this person? And all these different things. It's asking those questions, isn't it? It's putting the question out there and then saying, well, I think it's this, but maybe we should be checking this.
Stay curious. Stay curious. That's the answer, really.
Exactly. Before we jump to a conclusion, let's actually make the effort to find out. And I think it's certainly noticeable in football, you know, whether it be in actual clubs or in football supporters. You know, we all do it. You know, I'm guilty of it, and I'm sure we all do it. But it's also a bit of a human issue at the moment as well, isn't it? Is where we're given information, and far too often we just go, "All right, that must be true then."
Yeah.
And it's very often not the case. No. We're being fed stuff, and that's it.
Yeah.
But very, very interesting, and we're looking forward to seeing what happens towards the end of the season.
Very much, yeah. No, it really is getting exciting, isn't it? Both ends,
absolutely,
and in the middle.
Yeah. Where they've got nothing or something to play for.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah.
Nice one. Okay, mate. Well, I hope that's been a cathartic sort of getting rid of that frustration for you.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I managed
like a therapy session for you.
It's nothing like a good rant, is there?
Exactly.
Settles
exactly.
you down.
But thanks again. Thanks for listening. And again, thank you to Harvey England for his contributions this week. Really appreciate it. And we look forward to seeing you next week, where we'll be attacking the Championship. See you soon. Bye-bye.